Welcome back, everyone. This is The Change Show with Simon Phillips. And I'm joined by a really special guest today, a friend for over many years, and I'm really excited to introduce her to you. So welcome, Angie Beeston. How are you?
Hello, Simon. What a lovely intro. Thank you. Yeah, we have known each other a long time, haven't we? A really long time.
I was trying to think back just how many years, but, you know, my memory is useless on these things. Let's just say it was about 6 months ago, maybe.
Yeah, time flies. It probably was. It feels like it was only 6 months ago. Yeah, it was a little bit longer, but yeah, it's a long time. Yeah, I'm really good, thank you. Yeah, sun's shining, it's beautiful. Life's all good. So,
what more can we want? So, Angie, for the audience at home, tell them a little bit about yourself so that they can get a mental picture.
Okay, so I am Angie Beeston, and I've been running my own business now for, nearly 12 years. It's almost the 12th birthday on the 1st November 2022 will be its 12th birthday. But my background, a bit about me really, is I'm originally from Stoke-on-Trent, although I live in sunny Bournemouth now, have done for quite a long time. I moved with my job many years ago. And so yeah, originally from a proper Potteries girl, where good old Robbie Williams came from, and the man who designed Reginald Mitchell, who designed the Spitfire, so claim to fame there. But yes, it's it's been interesting moving south. I've absolutely loved it. So yeah, proper southerner now, even though I've still got a northern accent. But yeah, absolutely love it. So my business, yeah, started back in 2010, at the end of October, beginning November. I moved on and been absolutely loving the whole journey. And I hate using the word journey, but it has definitely been that. lots of a real roller coaster, really, I guess, as most entrepreneurs will probably recognise. So, yeah, so I basically focus on leadership and management, development of people, very much around helping to support individuals, teams and organisations to get better at what they do and more successful and add some polish on what they already do well.
Well, I know how you do that, so I know that you do a brilliant job. But tell us a little bit about how you got there to the point of deciding to start your own business. What was your career before your business?
Well, to be honest with you, like most people, we start with one path and end up elsewhere. And it's interesting when I look back and reflect, because I went to France when I was 13 on a French exchange trip, as you do. And we went to Strasbourg, and I absolutely fell in love with the Council of Europe. And it was amazing. And I met some of the translators there, and I did languages at school and at college. And I really wanted to do that job. I was absolutely desperate to be a translator at the Council of Europe. That was what I was going to do. So I did pretty well at languages at school, but then I went to college and had a bit of a reality check when I realised I went from the top of the class to the bottom of the class, and I realised I wasn't a linguist, and you have to be a linguist, of course. So I had to completely rethink what I was doing. I still did languages, so I did French, German and Italian. I went off to night school, so not as if I didn't have enough to do at school, but I went off to Italian in the evenings as well when I was doing my O-levels, as it was. That'll age me now. But yeah, it was interesting because at college I did French and Russian, along with secretarial work as well. So I was still into the languages, and I've always loved languages. But I would say I had to rethink because I wasn't good enough, to be honest. So it was a bit disappointing after all that time. But I had a drive to do something. And my mum and dad were amazing because they've always supported us. They just wanted us to be happy. Sounds a bit cheesy, but it's true. And they were more interested that we tried our best, done our best, and that we were enjoying what we did. So I managed to get a job with Royal Doulton. And I went to work for the chief exec of the hotel and airline division. I was only 21 at the time. And I was his PA. And I worked with him and three other directors. So it was a pretty high level job for my age. But he was amazing, I have to say. He was very patient and tolerant, because I'll come on to that in a minute. But I suddenly realised now what a maverick I probably was to manage. And it's really entertaining thinking about how, you know, they cope with that. I once took somebody on and sort of forgot to tell him because he was away overseas on a trip. And we didn't have Google or rent or emails and all that stuff. And I forgot to tell him I'd taken on a YTS person because and when they walked in the office, he had a bit of a shock. So yeah, I think I've always been a little bit of a bit out there. But it was really interesting because I learned a lot from him. He was amazing. He was a really good mentor. And one day I said to him, I want to do a business course. I didn't go to university. I left when I'd done my A-levels. And I want to do a business course. And the company agreed to pay for it. And he supported me all the way through. Actually, everything was paid for. So 6.5 years it took me in the end to get a postgrad. And I did business. So I did it in my own time. But it's really interesting because I'd always wanted to do something with business, but and I knew I wanted to do something other than the PA side of work, as much as I enjoyed it and had a great boss. He let me do lots of things, which was probably just as well. But yeah, he was really good. And we used to work with some global companies where we supplied to China, like Concord, the Orient Express at the time, you know, some amazing, the Ritz, incredible names that everyone would know. So it was really interesting, fascinating job. And I had lovely bosses. But when I wanted to move on, so I went into sales and again, loved the business side. And at some point I knew I wanted to be my own boss, but I didn't know what I wanted to do.
Now, hold on.
Go on.
You're getting carried away there. So you're a PA in one of the most famous pottery making companies in the world, working directly for the boss. And you decide, I know, I want to go out on the road and try and make it in sales. What's the journey there? What's going on?
Well, actually, yeah, I'm making it sound as though, yeah. Well, do you know it? All through my life, I've just said yes to lots of opportunities and just, and this has come, I have to credit my mum and dad for this, for having this sort of go-getting spirit, because they very much, although they didn't run their own businesses at all, but they were very much into life as an opportunity and it's always been there. And those values and everything else. And I'm very lucky. I know I'm very lucky that I've had all that. It's amazing. So the opportunity came up at head office, the Royal Dalton head office. I stayed in the company, but it was really interesting because the particular job that came up was a commercial assistance job. So that particular role was still office-based, but it was supporting the sales team.
Okay.
And so I went into that role and absolutely loved it. I just loved it. I loved meeting all the customers, all the people. It was fabulous. Really enjoyed it. So I got to know most of the UK customers that the area managers were looking after. And that's how I sort of fell into sales, because I realised I quite like people. So and I enjoy working with people. I enjoyed the customer's side. So a maternity leave cover came up in the Midlands, and my brothers thought it was hysterical because I couldn't read a map at that point and sat-nav didn't exist, so they thought it was really funny that I was ending up on the road. But you know, that's where I went, and I covered the West Midlands area, absolutely loved it, and then the rest is sort of history. And I actually realized I was all right at it. I quite liked it, and I liked the people and going out and meeting people. So yeah, I was in my element. So yeah, I ended up doing an area manager's role in the Midlands. Then they asked me to move north, further north. So I went to live in the Lake District. But I covered South Yorkshire to the top of Scotland and everything in between. It's a massive area. So although I love the job, love the people, absolutely fantastic. And we had a lot of fun. In 7 months, I think I knew the guy in the petrol station and the people at the hotels. And that was about it. So when they asked me to move again, that's how I ended up in the south, because they asked me to cover the southeast and southwest. And I actually came to live in Bournemouth area because we'd had a family holiday many years before. And I love this area, absolutely love being by the coast. So that's how I ended up down here. So yeah, I fell into sales and stayed in sales for quite a long time, to be honest.
So what would you say you learned most from your time in sales?
I think one of the big things for me was it's very much about being interested in people. And I always was, and I still am. I've always been interested in understanding people, and I think that's something that I just did, not realizing, sort of analyzing what I was doing, because it was just, I call it curiosity, other people call it nosy, but I'm just really interested in people. I think people, as humans, we're incredibly judgmental. That's the way we're wired. We know that people make a decision about you, don't you, like that, and you it's hard to unwind first impressions. And I'm very aware that we're all human. That's what happens. But for me, I think it's a bit criminal, really, that we do that, because when you have these conversations, and I know you are a massive network as well, you chat to lots of people, it's really important that we get to know who people are. And so many people have interesting backstories, what they've done, where they've been, and everybody's got a story. And I love that. And in sales, that it helps you to understand people. So yes, I know I had a budget. Yes, I know I had to go and earn money and you know, and achieve things, and I had a £3 million budget and I had to go and sell this stuff. Those are my targets. But aside from that, it was the people element. So I found, being the maverick that I am, that I ended up doing other things as well. So I didn't just go in and actually take orders. What I would do is have plenty of coffee and cake and lots of chats with people. I got to know all the family, everybody, and almost you become part of this amazing ceramics family. And it is a bit like that, the ceramic industry, like most industries. Because I went to work for Spode China because there was a lot of changes in Royal Doulton and it didn't quite work. So after nearly 10 years, I left and went to Spode. So I still had the same customers. I was just carrying a different product, which was interesting. But I went in and I'd help them with the merchandising. So sometimes you'd find me in the shop window, dressing the window. Method in my madness, because guess what? Spode was in the middle of it all. I did put other people's products there, of course.
Yeah. Behind the boxes.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Yes, yeah. But the Spode is predominant. But yeah, and I did that and I really enjoyed that. But the thing for sales, coming back to your question, it was very much about people, what makes them tick, how to help them as well, and knowing when you step back and you cut people slack. And I think for me, some people are not very good at spotting that, reading body languages, issues. And this is before emotional intelligence and everything else was starting to become massive. And I think it's important that we're quite aware of that. And I learned a lot. I mean, yes, of course, I made mistakes and I had some really tricky situations. And I had alcoholic customers who were hell, to be honest, when I arrived. And sometimes if they'd been drinking, they'd throw something at me, so I'd have to leave quickly. So it wasn't all, you know, cups of tea and cake. There were some interesting challenges, but it was essentially, it was about people and supporting them and knowing that if you could help them, it was great. Foot and mouth disease, when that happened, you remember that horrendous situation? Well, I had, at that point, had the area where there was a lot of tourism. It was all around the Cotswolds and down into Cornwall and so on, and Wales, of course, as well. And of course, the media were shouting about all these pyres everywhere. And I spent 6 months, no word of a lie, 6 months on the road. I still went to see my clients. I still went to see these shop owners because they needed support. If I took an order, I was lucky. I mean, I knew I wasn't, well, I just, to be honest, I accepted I was not going to hit my budget, but it wasn't about that. For me, it was about supporting them, because essentially business just stopped. Yeah. It was a bit like the pandemic in that respect. It just stopped, and no one would buy China because of what it's made of, and et cetera, all the linkage. So I spent 6 months driving around having lots of cups of tea, no orders. And if they did have a bit of spare money, because bear in mind they have to buy all the product, they'd give me something, you know, I'd just get a little token thing, which is fine. It probably wasn't economical, but from an integrity point of view, it was important for me. Yeah. And my goodness, I didn't realise the impact that would have when it lifted and everything went back to normal. When the budgets came through and they were spending money, guess where they spent it? You know, it was amazing. And I didn't do it for that reason. I did it because I genuinely cared about my customers. Yeah. But it paid, it came back tenfold. You know, it was amazing.
I've heard quite a few stories of people who did something similar during the pandemic, just because, as you say, they had a great relationship with those clients. It wasn't about putting in the effort for long-term gain. It was actually, no, I'm here to help. You know, I remember during the pandemic, putting a quiz together that you know about, some of the online quizzes are done, but I put a whole one together for a client, just because all of their people, they were a newly merged organization, literally merging at the time of the pandemic, and they had people all over the place that had only ever met on Zoom.
Oh wow.
teams. And so it's like, let's have an all company event. And now the only real way you can do that and make it engaging is to do something like the quiz. And, you know, but I did that because I could see that would help.
Yes. Not
because I had any sort of secondary intent. And I think clients can see through that anyway. But
Cameron,
you're right.
I think that's important, isn't it? That you remain utterly genuine. It pains me sometimes that people think that they should only do it when business is quiet, they haven't got anything to do. Right, if I do this, then that will lead to that. But no, because as you say, people see through that. It's not the right way, and it's not a good way to treat people either, because you wouldn't want to be treated like that yourself. So why would you do that to somebody else? So I think, you know, like doing the quiz and the pandemic, that's brilliant because it's a bit of fun for them. It's a bit of a relief as well in a pretty horrendous situation. So if you can give a bit of light-hearted touch during a tough, tough time, I think that's important. People will remember that because, isn't it all, I've forgotten, is it Maya Angelou who says people will never forget what you, people will forget what you said, but they'll never forget how you made them feel. I'm sure that's her quote. And it's so true, isn't it? We will remember that the impact is massive. So I think when you're dealing with people in any kind of business, any time, that's so important. So
love it. So was it straight from SPO to own business?
No, then I went. I decided I'd had enough of living out of a suitcase and driving 60,000 business miles a year. I thought it's probably time for me to not do that anymore. I'd got a bit fed up of it. As much as I loved the people, and I did love the people, and I did miss them. In fact, I'm still in touch with some of them, believe it or not. Some of my buyers I am still in touch with, and have become very good friends. And I now know their Christian names. I wasn't allowed to have them when I worked with them. It's like the Grace Brothers. So I now have, and now we're on Christian name terms. So yeah, I'm in touch with some of them still from years ago. So we've got great relationships. But no, I went to work for in the car industry, which was a complete change for me. I didn't know a lot about cars, that's for sure. But again, it's about people though. It was a sales job. And the role was business center. I was Toyota themselves. It was a Toyota dealer. And they set up a Toyota. This is a brand new project. And I applied for one job, but actually they told me about this other project and said, you'd be better off in that job because it suits your skills better. And they were right. But I loved it because it was a blank canvas. There were 60 business centres set up in the UK. So certain Toyota dealers, strategically, geographically placed, would have this brand new department. They were obviously already selling fleet vehicles and so on, but it was done through retail. So they decided they'd have a specialist centre. So I went in to be the business centre manager, and I loved that job. It was challenging, but I sold cars how I sold China, and which was fascinating because the car industry isn't particularly known for selling in the tea cake and the chats and that way. So I, that was a learning curve for everybody who also managed me. I think it was quite entertaining because it was a very different approach. But for me,
Did it work?
It did work. I went on quite a few incentive trips around the world. But yes, so it did work. it was really interesting, and I loved it. It was definitely out there, that's for sure, because of course it was target driven. Again, it was a sales job, but I loved it. I met a lot of different people, interesting people. In fact, about 3 years ago, so just before the pandemic, I went to a networking event in Southampton, and this lovely gent came flying across the floor to me and went, "You sold me my Toyota 15 years ago." I was like, "Oh my god!" So yeah, it's that's his good job. It's a good experience. So yeah, I bumped into him and I remembered him. So yeah, it was brilliant. I mean, I met some really interesting people. I used to sell vans as well, vans, trucks, and cars. Again, I wanted to do things slightly differently, so I come up with all these crazy ideas. And because we were in charge of marketing as well, and I'd previously done marketing at Royal Doulton within my sales role, I was really interested in that. But of course, you have brand identity, you've got to be careful. So I was constantly on the phone to Toyota directly. Sort of, I've had this idea, and I think they thought, oh, here she goes.
Can I say this?
Yeah, because I was like, oh, what's she doing now? So yeah, I spent nearly all my budget on marketing this crazy idea I had of using a chocolate bar wrapper as a mail shot letter. And the barcode was the phone number. And I had this crazy idea and I got it all printed up, and it's probably one of the best things I've ever done. I think it sold about 50 odd cars off the back of it. So it was worth it. It was a bit crazy though. And I was a bit like, of course it'll work.
Honest stuff.
Of course it will. You know, no one will forget the chocolate, and they didn't actually. So, yes. In fact, I found one of the old wrappers, obviously not the chocolate, but I found one of the old wrappers because I kept it for a prosperity, one of the spare ones. But yeah, it's really interesting what you then learn about people again. But interestingly, it's the same as selling, you know, the china, the giftware and the tableware to other customers. You're still dealing with people. And it's, again, it's understanding, thinking about emotions, how people feel. It's not just about selling the car. And when I was there was a recession. So we went to a recession, and I remember going from, we used to have a traffic light report, as you would in sales, really. Mm. And I remember going from the very top, or one of the top, to the very bottom, near enough, almost overnight. And it was just horrific because you're pedaling all the time. Yeah. You don't know what else to do, you know, you really don't know what to do. And I just kept going with that, you know, and I knew it would come back eventually because obviously recessions, it's cyclical, but it did take a bit of time. And because I was selling lease cars as well as obviously user choosers, you know, with how fleet works, some people were extending leases because they didn't want to spend out for a new car.
Yeah.
So it's that mindset of tenacity. So I stayed there for quite a while, absolutely loved it, and then thought it's time for a change. So I went off to Business Link, became a business advisor because I've got this postgrad degree in business and I'd always wanted to use it. I'd learned a lot. I learned even more at Business Link.
I was going to say, Angie, you know, marketing, sales, administration, relationship development, you know, you've talked about some of those other sort of fundamental building blocks for any business. You've done all of that, and then you came into Business Link and still learn more. And I think that says something for your tenacity to want to learn more as well.
Yeah, and I think for me, I feel a bit like one of those children who keeps going, why? Yeah, but why? But why? You know, but I think for me, it's that curiosity is so important because that's how we learn. And I've always been one who, you know, I'm not, some things I don't understand, they really go over my head. They're far too technical because I don't really particularly have a technical brain as such, you know, but the actual other areas, I'm fascinated by things work. If I can learn more stuff, you know, or I have a bit more of awareness about it. And the big thing for me, because of all that, like working with all different people, you get to a stage where you start realizing that it's all interconnected. So all the things you've learned and how you could help them, I'd go around and I've always had a mind where it's much more holistic. It's much more about the bigger picture. So, for example, in the Royal Doulton and Spode days, if a customer, like, you know, Mrs. Jones had come in and wanted a teapot lid because she'd broken it, I'd write it on my pad, and I'd spend my entire journeys looking for that teapot lid, trying to find a spare teapot lid in this particular pattern. So I've always done it to a degree and in varying stages of where I've been finding things and then really happy. And I'd end up with these big pilot cases, you know, used to truck around. And I'd be carrying a ton of spare parts for different people. Like, my garage at home was just full of things with labels on. This is for Mrs. Jones. This is for Mr. Such and Such. And I'd go and find bits and then take it because it helped my customer have a fantastic relationship with theirs. So when I went to Business Link, that was an eye-opener because there was lots of things, of course, I really didn't know about setting up businesses, the legal structures and everything else. So I as I put it to someone, you learn the good, the bad and the ugly, essentially.
Yeah.
All through that, every mix. But fascinating how to develop a business relationship with somebody very quickly. So all the stuff I'd learned all through my life so far to that point came to, you know, came to the head where it really helped, because people used to come along and have 1 hour slot with me. Half the time I'd never spoken to them or met them because it was booked by my lovely team back at head office, because I was out on the road. I covered the New Forest, so I had a lovely area. And it was just, people would come in and literally just go boom, and everything would be thrown at me. And I didn't know what I was walking into half the time. And I love that, because it keeps you on your toes. You do not know what you're going to get asked at all at that point.
And that was where I almost met you, because I was in your diary, and because I was moving to this area and I was working with the guys at Business Link further down, sort of Bournemouth Pool area.
Yeah.
And they had referred me on to you to meet up with you. So I say almost met you, because I don't remember the details, but for whatever reason, that meeting dropped out of our diary. So I didn't actually get to meet you. But then when I did get to meet you, it's like, I know that name. I know the name. So,
yes. So yeah, it was interesting. You're absolutely right. And I can't even remember why, because obviously that was quite a long time ago. I can't remember why. And then our paths thankfully crossed later on. Yeah. But that was a really interesting job, because I got to meet people from, again, all walks of life, all different people, and really interesting of what was inspiring them to start the business. And as I spent more time in that role, to be honest with you, I thought I'd actually found a job that I'd probably stay in, because you know, I thought, I love this, I absolutely love it. It had its moments, of course, like every job, but I had the best bosses. They were amazing, the bosses. They were so lovely. I've been quite lucky, really. I've had the odd one or two dodgy ones, but who've been quite difficult to manage in my earlier career. But actually, I've been pretty lucky, pretty blessed with pretty good bosses, you know. So when Business Link, it was pretty obvious that this framework was not going to be able to be sustainable. So, and it was weird for me, because this was a Quango rather than an actual commercial business. So it was a bit strange for me to understand the dynamics of that. So that was a learning curve as well. But it was fascinating to learn all that. And my head was full again of all this other new stuff. So when changes were coming through, redundancy was on the card. I think it was about the fourth round of redundancy. And I thought, well, it's time to go and do it myself. So it was a very weird situation, because normally I'd have had my CV typed and I'd have been out applying for jobs, because I knew redundancy was there. It was really weird to not be doing that and to think, actually, this is it. So what I did, I knew I had 15 weeks to launch a business. That was like from the, and they knew, because obviously I was very transparent, I told them what I was going to do. So I had 15 weeks. So people love this, especially techie people. It sends them into a spin. So I sellotaped together 15 sheets of A4 paper, which I could show you because I have in my office. And so the 15th sheet was 15 weeks, launch business. And I worked all the way back. I did the Stephen Covey, start with the end in mind, worked all the way back. What do I need to do each week? Because I was still working full time. And I, as each week went on, I tore the sheet off. And anything wasn't done, I'd cross over. Yep. So you'll appreciate this because you've written books on time management. So, and it, what it did was focus me. And as the sheet was shrinking and coming down, the visual was so powerful. But I knew that last sheet of paper, it said launch business. It worked because I managed to finish on the Friday and I started my business on the Monday. That was it. So
that sounds like the perfect place to take a break. So we'll come back and we'll talk all about the launch of your business and how you got that off the ground and everything that you've done since. So thanks, Angie. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Messages. Welcome back, everyone. This is Simon Phillips and The Change Show. My very special guest, Angie Beeston. We've been plotting her very varied career, as it turns out, across so many different aspects of business, and then all consolidated, I guess, in that role at Business Link, which, as you say, is an organization that helps small businesses to get started and prosper in what they're doing. So loads of experience there, and I know that you would have been a really good advisor. So tell us then,
keep us in suspense no longer. How did the launch go?
It was, do you know what? It was, if I had my time again, I'd probably make more of a powwow of it. But unusually for me, it was very quiet. I just, on the Monday morning, I suddenly just sat there and thought, oh, it's mine now. It's me. It was up to me. If it is to be, it's up to me now. That's it. Off we go. So yeah, and I actually had work immediately. So it was very much about hitting the ground running and starting to get out and deliver work. So when I first started, I started as a sole trader to keep it nice and easy. And I also decided I'd do quite a lot of sales work, because as much as I didn't really want to continue to do that, I knew that I could do it, and it would be a great way to get the business off the ground. Yeah. And of course, a lot of small businesses don't like doing their own sales. They don't enjoy it. So I used to go in and be the hired salesperson. So essentially I'd work as a subcontractor for them. So yeah, so it was quite quiet, really. It wasn't a big sort of like song and dance. I put it on, obviously, on the social media platforms, and it was out there. I'd already emailed some of my sort of connections anyway, because I've always done a lot of networking, and I've been chair of various networking groups and things in the past. So I put something out there to say, these are my new contact details. If you want to stay in touch, this is my new email address, and so on. Yeah. And I had a couple of people email me to say, I hope the new boss is good, you know, and is going to look after you. And I started laughing, sort of, you know, and I wrote back and thought, yeah, I hope so as well. Let's hope she's not too much of a slave driver. But so, yeah, so it was literally, I hit the ground running. And, you know, I have to say, I'm incredibly grateful and very blessed that some of my clients who I've worked with have just been amazing. And from day one, and one or two of them were very good. And the fact that I worked with them for quite a length of time, I don't normally go in and just do a quick win and I'm in and out. It's not the way I work. I tend to work more on a relationship basis, where I work with people for a longer period of time, not with the same people, often with different people. And I prefer that, yeah, because it gives you a chance to embed learning and so on. And I've worked with, I often get asked this question, do I niche into certain markets? I've chosen not to. It's a very conscious decision, because I enjoy working with different types of businesses. Usually the problems, the challenges, the issues are exactly the same. And you'll know this because of the work you do. It's just different. It's got a different letterhead, you know, there's a different logo on the top, the business, and there's a different profit and loss sheet. But essentially, in a nutshell, people are people, and the business challenges are the same in varying guises. Yeah. I've been fortunate with different clients. I've traveled as well. So I've been to Middle East, I've been into Europe, you know, working under their banner. I've done associate work and do associate work. So I feel very blessed that I've got this amazing group of clients now. They're like my team of clients, really, and a really good relationship with them. And it's great, because, you know, I've often been a believer, you're not going to fit everybody. You know, you'll fit the tribe that you attract, or the people who will value you, and you value them. It's not going to work for everybody. And I get that and understand that. And I think we all need to be aware of that. You know, sometimes my colourful approach doesn't sometimes work with some people, but that's okay, you know, because the people I do work with, I work well with. So I've been really fortunate in that respect.
Did the leadership and team development stuff, did that emerge organically from the clients that you were working with on the sales side?
No, it didn't. It was a whole new set of clients, to be honest. What actually happened, it was, again, this was actually written with it into a business plan. I knew that I would need, because I'd gone from working for global names with big brands and everything else everyone had heard of, to me, it's just me. And I was very aware of that. So I thought I need to actually develop and build up a bit of gravitas, a bit of a reputation for good reputation, obviously, but, you know, a reputation out there for what I do. So it was a very slow burn. So I suppose it was organic, but I started with coaching and mentoring, and right, I did have one or two clients when I first started. And it was very conscious that within 18 months, I wanted to tip the whole thing on its head and only do coaching and mentoring and leadership work, but the leadership work came later. And again, I think we hit another recession. So you've got to love them, haven't you, really? So back to another change again. I started in a recession. So I thought, well, you know, some people thought I was insane, but hey, you know, you've got to go with it. And I thought, well, if it doesn't work, I'll do my CV and I'll, you know, at least I've tried. At least I'm going to go. So it might work. And what happens if it does? So I consciously thought to myself, right, if I give myself some time, I can switch it over eventually. So I went over to doing leadership work. That actually came through, some of it through coaching and mentoring, but a lot of it was through other referrals. I've never advertised my business, which is interesting. I was thinking about this the other day. I think I've only ever paid out once to have flyers done, which I never end up using anyway. So everything's come through recommendations, referrals, and so on, and getting to know people. So it's been, that's pretty good, really. You know, it's been quite amazing, the people I've met. Maybe I've met people networking as well, and I've got to meet people directly. So that's been fantastic. So yeah, it's just amazing how you create this, you attract in new clients. So yeah, it's really interesting how you then adapt the challenges. But I definitely knew that I couldn't just go straight into leadership. I needed to have something under my belt for my own benefit as well. You know, so I think it was probably, I'm trying to think when it was, I reckon it was about 3 or 4 years before I fully started doing leadership courses. Okay. And, you know, so, and two of the ones I do are quality assured through the Institute of Leadership Management, the ILM. So they are accredited courses. So both of them are leadership, two different levels, effectively. But I didn't do them until 2014. So yeah, it was 4 years in before I started doing that. And that's been fine, actually, to do that. I think it was the right thing to do.
So talk us through an average week then in terms of some of this leadership and team stuff that you do.
Is there such a thing as an average week when you're an entrepreneur? I'm not sure there is. In fact, yeah, if I think about it, a typical week for me would probably be a mix of doing coaching and mentoring. And I always call it coaching and mentoring. I'm not a pure coach. I'm not a pure mentor. I blend them. And sometimes it's training as well. The whole thing flows in. But so it's going to be a mix of that. Some of it's design work as well, because I absolutely love designing courses. Everything I do is bespoke. I've thought long and hard about whether I should generalize this, because it takes a lot of time, a lot of headspace, and a lot of thinking and creativity. But I love that bit, so I absolutely adore it. And the one thing it does, of course, is make it relevant. So for me, I spend, there's a mix of that. In fact, I'm just going to look at my diary as a typical week. Sometimes I'll arrange meetings with people who might be coming with me to look at the next phase of Evolution for Business, because I am now looking at the next bit, what I want to do, that was on my original business plan that I haven't yet done. But I will do. And I've had a logo designed for it, so which came through yesterday. So I'm very excited about that. So all will be revealed shortly. So yes, it's a mix of that. So a bit of strategic headspace, which since I preach it to everyone else, I should do some of myself. So a bit of that, client meetings, occasional networking meetings. I don't do a lot of face-to-face at the moment, which is interesting. I do some face-to-face delivery. Most of it's virtual. You know, I'm still in that space. And also, I quite like to catch up with people just for quick chats and a quick coffee, which is nice and easy on virtual anyway, you know, a quick chat with people. So yeah, I'm fitting in my swimming, my walking. So important. Instead of my commute, that's what I do every morning.
Well, yeah, I think... What I detect there is a love of variety, and you know, it's what attracted you probably to the likes of Business Link in the first place, and some of the other roles that you've taken on, is that opportunity to do different things, as you say, that innate curiosity. In terms of all the tools that you've picked up and the mindset that you've developed, can you think of a time where you personally were going through a specific change, and which tools did you draw on, which approaches helped you most to help you get through a specific change of your own?
Well, there's probably been massive changes. This is going to be interesting because I'm putting this into context now. Starting my business, I wouldn't class that on the same level as these other two situations. So the pandemic, bless it, that has got to be one of the biggest that's obviously affected, I know, every single person across the entire globe, which was quite takes a bit of headspace to get your head around that. My mum died very suddenly when I was 26 and completely out of the blue. And I was still living at home and I was in the middle of doing my final bit of my postgraduate degree and working. And that threw me sideways. And it was really interesting because at that point, I'm trying to think what job I was doing. I was commercial assistant, so I was supporting the sales team. Yeah. And that threw me in another space. It really did. It was really interesting to look back on that now and think about how I went through that, because we still had exams to sit. I still had a dissertation to hand in. And it was almost that, I don't know quite where it came from, but this determination after 6.5 years, I know that my mum would have wanted us, and my brother was also doing it with me as well, same course. You know, he was a bit younger. She wanted us to succeed, and we'd just come back from the Czech Republic on one of these business trips, shall we say, a residential. What happens in Brno stays in Brno. But you know, it was interesting because we'd just come back from that, and that was part of the postgrad. I chose to go to Brno, not knowing anything about it, and absolutely fell in love with it. Again, languages, I bought a Czech phrase book and tried really hard to learn some Czech while I was out there. And it was interesting. So we came back and then all this happened. And it was just, I think it threw me sideways, but I was also quite determined that I would just crack on and do it. And there was a lot of sleepless nights, as you can imagine. And in fact, even the stress of the exam went away because it's almost on a scale. It's all, yeah, you know, so that was massive. So I think for me, I probably took more from what I'd learned from my mum's approach. Mm. When the pandemic hit 2 and a bit years ago, I have shared this with some people, that I did sort of sit there a bit dazed for a few days, which isn't normally me. Normally I'm action driven and I crack on and do stuff. And then I thought, right, well, what can I do? Let's get back to controllables. So for me, it's very much about what I can control and almost stop worrying about all the other stuff, because I thought, I can't really do anything about that at this moment in time. So one thing that struck me was I realized quite quickly that to help me, I needed to feel like I was doing something useful. And I'd never known that about myself until that point. And it suddenly struck me, and I thought, and I went back to what I'd done with, you know, with the foot and mouth thing. Yeah. And I thought, I've got all these wonderful, lovely friends who are in crisis, and probably far more than I felt at that point, because they've got teams of people, they're responsible for multi-million pound businesses. Do you know what? It's all relative, isn't it? So I actually spent quite a bit of time sort of thinking I need to sort of reach out. So there wasn't loads. It was just a few people who, you know, who I care about, that I'm in business, and my clients as well, those people. And I reached out and just, everything okay? How can I help you? How can I support you? What do you want me to do? And I was blown away, as I had lots of phone calls, actually. I had loads of people say to me, we want to work with you. We're not going to just let you go. We will find a way to do this. Clearly, we had to do it remote. I hadn't got a clue about how to use Zoom at that point. Not a clue. And you, as you know, I have avoided technology for a long time. So I consciously used to do face-to-face and avoided the rest. So I was flung into it. But for me, it was that change at that point was I had to take a lot of my own medicine that I help other people with. So it was very much about coming back and saying, right, what can I do? What can't I do? Fill my time with purposeful stuff, keeping in touch with people, learning new. And I thought, I'm going to take this as a learning opportunity. So I wrote myself a list, because I like lists and notebooks. And I wrote a list of 50 things that I was planning on doing personally that I've always wanted to do, but never had the time to do, because all of a sudden the world stopped. So I thought, oh, I'm going to do this. So I wrote myself a list, and then I did one for business, and I wrote another one. And then I started ticking them off as I was doing that. And it gave me a real focus, because again, it was that controllable. I felt like I'd got some control, even though everything else was just chaos.
Yeah.
And admittedly, of course, you know, the economics were pretty horrific, but it helped me to understand that I could do things. There was stuff I could do. So instead of it being focusing on what I can't, I went on the stuff I could. I did have wobble moments, quite, you know, one or two quite bad wobble moments, but what I actually did was I closed my laptop up, because obviously I didn't have client meetings at that point. I closed my laptop and I went for a long walk, and I thought, I'm just going to go for a long walk, because we could. And I thought, I'm just, and it suddenly occurred to me that as a limited company, I am a managing director. That's my job title. It's a title, but it's a job title. So I had this hashtag in my head all the time, all through pandemic, be more MD. Hashtag be more MD. And I had that in my head all the time. So whenever things got a bit tough or a bit leery, or we weren't sure what was going on, be more MD. You are an MD, behave like one, act like one, be one. So, and it actually helped me massively, because it shifted my mindset. So yeah. The resilience, I had to dig pretty deep. I think we all did. But yeah, that's what helped me, be more MD. So.
And I think the other element that I'm attracted to in what you were talking about there, because it's a key element of my new book on time management called Dynamic Time Management, is that notion of what can I control? The controllables, I think you call them. So my dynamic flow model is saying, yes, there are some time management principles we can put in place, but let's only deal with the things that we can actually control. Everything else we need to learn how to accept.
You know,
and some of that can be painful to think about, some of the things that we have to accept. It's not that we have to accept them forever, but in the moment, can I do anything about that right now? No. Okay, I'll accept that. That leaves my energy free to deal with the things that I can control. And so, you know, that resonates with me. Angie, what a roller coaster of information and ideas and thoughts and inspiration. It's been absolutely brilliant talking to you. But this is where it all gets a bit serious, and I'm afraid you're not allowed to leave the Chain Show until you've chosen your favorite record. And it has to be something from the 60s, 70s, 80s and 90s to qualify. So what have you got?
Right, well, you know, you asked me for only one.
Yeah.
It said a record. So being a maverick, as we've now established I am, I go slightly off piece sometimes. I actually
get a compilation album out. You get a compilation album out and think, right, okay, there's one record.
Yeah, I probably should do. So there was, so I picked out four that sprung to mind. So, and it's very eclectic, I will warn you, but they've all got a story around them. So I picked Barry Manilow's Copacabana, right, was one of them. Julio Iglesias, Begin the Begin.
Yeah.
Right. These have come from, I will quickly put a context around this. My dad used to have a cassette tape deck in the car. And when we used to go on holiday, and my brothers would sit in the back singing along to all this. And in fact, this is what inspired me. I used to sing in a band, and this is what inspired me, all this stuff. Not that I ever sang those songs. Nat King Cole's On the Street Where You Live, because I absolutely love that. And we were brought up on that kind of music. And again, I used to be big band singer.
I think that might be a bit outside of our time frame, that King Cole.
Well, I wasn't sure on the street where you live. I think it might be, actually. But the one that really resonates with me and has made me smile, because it made me think of lots of family parties, friends, and sadly, who are no longer with us, but had this particular song where I often got into trouble because I usually couldn't stand up after I'd done it, not because I hadn't drunk, but because I was dancing to it. It's Oops Upside Your Head by the Gap Band.
Oh, fantastic.
Because that makes me laugh so much. When I hear that, it brings back all these crazy memories of many parties on boats and all over the place, and 70th birthday parties. Lots of happy memories associated with that particular song.
Wonderful. Angie, what a delight. Thank you so much for spending some time with us today here on The Chain Show. So just quickly, how can people get in touch if they want to reach out to you?
Okay, so, well, first of all, thank you for inviting me on, Simon. It's been an absolute pleasure to sit and talk to you and reminisce about, you know, the journey. I don't often do it, so thank you. Pull through some amazing memories as well, so thank you for that. So probably the best place is I'm on LinkedIn, so you look up Angie Beeston, you'll find me. My company name is Evolution for Business, and it's the number 4, so you'll find me on there, or on email as well. So it's angie@evolutionforbusiness.co.uk. ping me an email. I have got a website, and which you'll find if you go onto LinkedIn as well. And it'd be great to hear from you if any of this has resonated, or you want to find out a bit more. As we've been talking about, everything's bespoke. So if you just are a bit curious yourself about finding out a bit more of what I can do to try and help you and your teams, or even just yourself, to work through this hybrid world we're in, the agile world, all these buzzwords that are coming through, but I'd be really happy to have a Zoom coffee with you and a chat. So it'd be great to meet you. So thank you so much, though, Simon. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for playing my song as well.
My pleasure. Angie, fantastic to see you. Come back here and we'll have another Zoom coffee at some point on the Change Show as well. So that'd be wonderful. Maybe when you've got this mysterious new part of your business up.
Yes. Now I've said it, it'll have to happen, won't it? Because I've said it now.
Yeah. I'll be calling you in a few months' time. You know I will, saying, come on.
Good. Hold me accountable. I need it.
Brilliant. Thank you again.
Thank you.
A wonderful week. And we'll all be back here again next week for another edition of The Change Show. Take care.